Bootstrapping, a Cobra Kai fanfic by Minocchio, read by GorillasGal86. Rating, explicit. Fandoms, Cobra Kai and Karate Kid. Relationship, Daniel LaRusso and Johnny Lawrence. Summary, in which the early 20s competing dumpster fires of Gotta Hustle Daniel and Gotta Take My Stepdad's Money and Burn It Johnny meet again. Chapter 1. Checking balance, $283. Cash on hand, $25. Rent due, soon. The bar is low effort, even for Westwood standards. A few neon beer signs on the walls and one lonely UCLA pennant that looked like it was positioned during a drunk game of pin the tail on the donkey, except they forgot the donkey. The pool tables have spots where the felt is worn thin and the walls are covered in old wood paneling that seem to suck in all the light and hope in the universe and give back only the smell of years of cigarettes. But Daniel's not there to judge the decor. "And you say you have experience," says Roy, the owner's nephew, who is more interested in the ass of the girl passing their booth than Daniel's response. Daniel's not a sucker, and responds in kind. "Oh yeah," he says casually. "Tended bar for 2 semesters back in Jersey. I know my way around a shelf." Roy's face twitches slightly, awareness threatening to surface.
"The speed rail, you mean?"
"Yeah, the speed rail. Of course, I mean the speed rail."
Roy nods. "Okay, well, as you probably know, midterms are coming up and I've lost a couple employees to school."
And Daniel tries to look appropriately scandalized by some people's priorities.
"So I really need someone who can cover weeknights, that's including Fridays. Also, you'd basically be on call for Saturdays, in case we get slammed."
It all works better if Daniel doesn't let himself think about it. If he was to actually sit here in this wooden booth and close his eyes and breathe in the smell of spilled beer and ashtrays and think about how he already works 35 hours a week down at Abe Anderson's Value Lot and Lube and how he barely gets to see his ma or Mr. Miyagi as it is and how is he supposed to remain balanced on 4 or 5 hours of sleep 5 nights a week anyway? If he lets himself think about it, he knows he won't do it. But he needs to do it. If he's ever going to do anything else. So, "I'm your man," says Daniel, flashing an easy smile. On Tuesday, he performs 22 oil changes and listens to a 2-hour retelling of Juan and Sean's epic weekend gatecrashing of Sean's cousin's roommate's wedding down in Malibu that past weekend. At least half of it's a lie, he figures. Not being sure which, he doubts more. The part where they stole a catering van or hooked up with the scorching hot catering babes afterwards. If he was at work and someone stole his van, he'd be very more likely to deck them than kiss them. After work, he stops by his apartment and feeds his fish. He washes the dishes from last night. He thinks about taking a nap, but resents the idea of giving up any of his breaks so much. He ends up frozen in indecision and wasting half an hour not absorbing a word of his library book before giving up and stretching out on top of his bed. Then he can't fall asleep. He reheats his supper and takes a shower and is out the door again. He gets to the bar 15 minutes early. The other bartender is a girl with platinum blonde hair and a nose ring who looks far too intense for a bar that caters to drunk co-eds with no taste. She looks him up and down, casually dismissive, but in the inoffensive way of a woman's studies major. He resolves not to hit on her, and they get along just fine. It's a quiet night. On Wednesday, he wakes up 20 minutes before his alarm. He decides to try a kata before going to work, but it's no good trying to center himself while keeping one eye on the clock. At the lot, he performs 21 oil changes and listens to Sean lecture him on the cheapest way to fix a dent in a door without having to replace it. He eats his lunch sandwich sitting out back on the trunk of a Lincoln they were in the process of cannibalizing for parts, chewing dumbly and staring even more dumbly into the hazy smog of the middle distance past the chain-link fence, listening to the drone of traffic on the I-5.
After work, he stops by his apartment and feeds his fish. He washes the dishes from last night. He thinks about taking a nap, but he calls his ma instead. He stretches out on his back on the living room rug with his eyes closed, listening to her chatter about her work. Then he reheats his supper and takes a shower and is out the door again. He gets to the bar 5 minutes early and nods hello to Michelle.
Someone is playing Roxette on the jukebox.
I hate this song, says Michelle as he passes. She says it like it's a test. He pauses and reflects and says,
yeah, me too.
Because who wants to think about what something might have been after it's too late?
It's a quiet night.
On Thursday, he wakes up to his alarm feeling like he'd only fallen asleep 20 minutes before. He stubs his toe on his bathroom cabinet and forgets to shave, not that it really matters. At work, he performs 19 oil changes and listens to Juan expound on his brilliant business idea of building derby cars from the lot's cast-offs and running them against the fools up in Ventura. He puts the wrong type of oil in some guy's shitty 1980 Pinto and apologizes but refuses to take further shit for it when the guy won't let it go, and John has to shove him out the back door and tell him to cool off. After work, he stops by his apartment and feeds his fish. He washes the dishes from last night. He sits in his armchair and wakes up to the room bathed in the orange light of sunset, 10 minutes before he has to be at work. He doesn't get to eat supper or take a shower. He still has oil under his fingernails when he runs into the bar 15 minutes late.
Nice, real nice, says Michelle.
You ever hear of Thirsty Thursday?
What the alcoholics call a practice run, right?
He replies shortly and then,
sorry, I'm sorry, I fell asleep.
She looks him over with a grudging sympathy as she slaps together a whiskey sour.
It's fine. It's just, we've got some real assholes in here already.
Watch out for the guys over by the dartboard. They don't tip.
And the shitty, long week all comes together. Perfectly balanced, even. As Daniel looks up and sees Johnny Lawrence across the room.
Chapter 2. Checking balance, $447. Cash on hand, $40. Rent due soon.
You okay? He asks Michelle.
He turns and lifts a fresh crate of glasses into place below the bar. His eyes return to the group across the room.
They do anything?
Yeah, like I said, they didn't tip, she says, a little nonpulsed. Also, they stared at my chest, but that kind of goes without saying.
Okay, well, if they give any trouble, let me know. I'll take care of it.
Michelle eyes him, dark eyes full of a very familiar skepticism.
Why? You packing heat or something?
On the other side of the room, Johnny throws a 555 and crows his victory to the ceiling. He turns and picks up the table's pitcher and refills his glass.
Or something, says Daniel.
They are pretty slammed, so Daniel gets a couple hours into his shift without having to interact with Johnny. He almost, but doesn't quite, manage to forget about him as he shovels ice and pulls drafts and mixes terrible rail drink after terrible rail drink. An ache starts up between his shoulder blades, but aside from taking 3 minutes in the back room to try to stretch it out, there's nothing he can do about it. He gets to talking to a cute girl sitting at the bar in between orders. Her friend has abandoned her for a mullet 6 stools down. She is funny about it, in a deadpan sort of way, and looks at him like he's a person and not a vending machine she wants to shake to get her order faster. Daniel gives her a 7 and 7 on the house and leans forward on his elbows with a smile. She stirs her straw through the ice and smiles back.
Hey man, there are other people waiting to be served here, says an asshole.
Daniel doesn't move to straighten up, just turns his head, hanging onto his smile, and meets Johnny's eyes. After a moment, Johnny widens his meaningfully and lifts a bill between his middle and forefinger. A lock of hair falls over Daniel's eyes as he slowly moves down to stand in front of him. He shakes it out of the way, braces his wrists on top of the bar, and says impassively,
"What'll it be, man?"
Johnny drops the bill in front of him like a man tossing a coin to a busker. "Pitcher all lucky." And when Daniel turns around to fill the pitcher, he says to his back, Didn't know you worked here, LaRusso. So that answers the question of whether he recognized him. Would be a little weird if he didn't, but Daniel kind of gets the impression the other guy has spent the past couple years pickling his brain in that 5% solution. Just started, he says over his shoulder and pulls the tap handle. He lifts just his eyes to the mirror over the bar and is only slightly startled to meet Johnny's in the reflection. Johnny smirks. He shoves the tap back and lifts the pitcher. He picks up the bill and nods at Johnny and turns away to shove it in the till. He is content to leave it at that and call it a reunion and let's do it again never, except Johnny doesn't move. Where's my change? He asks, before Daniel can return to the waiting girl with the 7 and 7. Daniel doesn't sigh because he anticipated this. If he's being honest, he'd hoped for it. He turns back to Johnny, standing there, high school meathead filling out in his chrysalis toward his final form of polo-wrapped beer-gut asshole playing golf somewhere. No change, he says. He reaches for a towel and begins drying glasses, just to have something to do with his hands. No change bullshit, man. I gave you a 10. And this is the 4th pitcher you and your pals have ordered tonight, and you didn't tip Michelle for any of them, says Daniel. I figure $2 should even it up a bit. Johnny squints, eyes darting down the bar to Michelle. His mouth pulls up in a sneer. Still a knight in shining armor, Hollerusso. Daniel smiles and shrugs and says nothing, just continues to stare him down. You know what? He puts his hands up. I don't care. It's $2 fucking. Enjoy the pocket change. Don't spend it all in one place. And when he turns away, pitcher in hand, Daniel has to stop himself from launching a glass at the back of his head. An hour later, they seem to be in between waves at the bar, so Daniel grabs a tub and rag and starts making the rounds, wiping up where he can. When he gets to the table Johnny and his friends had been occupying, there are 10 dirty glasses, spilled beer flecked with ash from the overfilled ashtray, and a crisp $20 bill pinned at the corner by the empty pitcher. Beside it, scrawled on a napkin, "For Daniel. I expect better service next time." Smiley face. Before he can think better of it, let himself get seduced by the wizened face of Andrew Jackson, Daniel picks the bill up and calmly shreds it. "Aw, man," says a guy at the next table over. "If you were going to do that, I would have taken it." Daniel gets on with clearing the table. Chapter 3. Checking balance, $447. Cash on hand, $33. Rent due soon. "Danny," says Sean, "you look like something my puppy shed out and then tried to eat again." Juan pauses on his way across the garage floor, picking up the cue that it was time to mess with him. He tucks his clipboard under his arm and makes a show of bending and peering at Daniel's face. After a second, he raises a finger and wags it at him. "You get a new girl or something? Having yourself a little too much midnight pasta, huh?" Behind them, Sean cackles, and he looks back at him, conspiratorial. "Gotta keep that linguine al dente, eh?" "What even?" mutters Daniel, straightening up from the engine compartment of the Dodge. He braces a hand on his hip and says, "Hey, why do I feel like I'm the only guy in this place ever actually working?" The other two exchange another glance. "Probably his ego talking, I don't know," says Sean. "Gotta be," agrees Juan. "But to return to the question at hand, why do you look like dog shit, dude? Anyone see you, state gonna come in here and slap Carl with a child labor violation or something." Daniel shakes his head and finishes refilling the radiator fluid on the Dodge. "Picked up a second job, bar down in Westwood." Interested noises from the guys. He says over his shoulder, "Don't start, I'm not telling you which one."
"Danny!"
"Hombrecito!"
"Forget it," he says shortly, shutting the hood with finality. "You guys are going to show up expecting drinks on the house. I need this job, and I need my coworker to respect me, which she won't with you two morons standing around gawping."
"See if we don't call CPS on your ass," says Sean.
Daniel slaps a hand at him and moves on to the next waiting car.
Before leaving for the bar that night, he stands in a towel in his bathroom and studies his reflection critically. The slight shadow on his upper lip is depressing as always, making him look like he needs to wash his face rather than shave. But all the same, he doesn't think he looks like a kid anymore. Fuck the guys at the garage. He made it to 23 without gaining 20 pounds of beer bloat, and he can still throw a guy over his shoulder if he needs to. Probably. He shaves and combs his hair back from his forehead and calls it good. That's all he can do. You ready for this? Asks Michelle at 9:09 that evening. I know it's Friday, but aren't midterms on? He asks, and she just gives him a pitying look before sliding past to restock the mini-fridge below the bar. By 11:30, he hasn't sat down or stopped moving in a couple hours. A substantial part of his brain has gone quiet, switched off. Presumably it will come back again eventually, but for the moment he is only half a person. An autonomous, organic machine that exists to parse shouted, slurring orders over the booming speaker system and pour drinks. He never thought the sight of young and fit bodies rubbing up next to each other could leave him so unmoved. But in a way it makes sense. With the bar counter between them, they're basically not even the same species of animal. Your friend's back! Shouts Michelle, passing by carrying a couple replacement bottles of Old Crow and Taka. My. He looks around and spots a light catching on a tall head of fool's gold. Oh, great. Johnny's with another entourage of three or four guys. He's wearing a salmon-colored sweater knotted over his shoulders. A platinum wristwatch glints in the low light of the bar, drawing attention to his thick arms. It is too busy in the bar for any newcomers to have a hope at the darts or pool tables. And Daniel prays this means Johnny will move along to the next stop on his lame bar crawl. Which is exactly the kind of wishful thinking that gets him the guy shouldering in at the bar a few minutes later, bright eyes seeking him out under the dim lights. The smile that follows is nothing short of malicious. LaRusso! Shouts Johnny. What do you want? Hey, is that any kind of way to treat a patron? Especially one who tips as good as me. And when Daniel only stares flatly at him, he leans his elbows on the bar and asks, What'd you spend it on? Were you able to buy yourself a decent meal at last? I bought your ma some flowers, says Daniel. The smile on the other guy's face turns stiff at the edges, and it makes Daniel only grow more genuine. Amazing how little it takes for someone to give it up these days. Yeah, says Johnny after a moment. You're right. Watch this. He turns sideways, hip knocking against the bar, and cups his hands over his mouth. Round on me for everybody at the bar. And as the packed line of inebriated flesh gives a hearty cheer, and people rush forward from the rest of the room to be included in the fine print, Johnny turns back to him, smirk restored to full power. That goes for you and the chick, too, he says, nodding at Michelle. I'm going to need you to pay for that up front before I start pouring drinks, is all Daniel says, though somewhere in the back of his head he's gone cold and seething. The crisp slap of Johnny's card on the counter should not have been audible over the music, but somehow it was. I don't drink, says Michelle, as Daniel vindictively grabs the Johnny Walker Black to pour out a pair of shots. That's okay, he says, tipping the glass back. I'll take yours. Some time past midnight, he cuts his index finger while slicing a lime for a row of tequila shots. He passes the order off to Michelle and bustles out from behind the bar, heading down the narrow hallway past the bathrooms to the storeroom at the back. He walks in on Johnny fucking a girl on top of the chest freezer against the far wall. Chapter 4. Checking balance, $447. Cash on hand, $41. Rent due, soon. He's giving it to her pretty good. Pale ass clenching in the air as he thrusts. One hand wrapped around her waist and the other braced against the freezer. She's making these little sounds. But it's no wonder Daniel didn't get any warning before opening the door. All told, the pair is very quiet.
He slaps the door to the opposite wall hard, and the stealth fucking judders to a halt, balls deep as it happens.
"Oh my God," gasps the girl, apparently possessing a little remnant of shame somewhere deep down.
Her hands retract from Johnny's hips to cover her chest. For his part, Johnny glances casually over his shoulder, totally unbothered. "Hey, LaRusso, what can I help you with?"
"Oh my God, stop! Get out!"
she whispers, hands shoving. Johnny pulls out, and in some hateful part of his brain, Daniel swears he can hear it, both the withdrawal and the little exhalation the girl makes. Then she is slipping off the freezer and scurrying for the door, hand tugging her dress back up over her shoulders, her face and soft tits a brilliant crimson. Daniel stands aside and politely keeps his eyes averted by way of staring Johnny down. Johnny makes no effort to tuck himself away, only turns and leans back against the freezer. His cock is still red and hard, shining slick from where it had recently been buried. Daniel can smell it from across the small room. The girl, their sweat.
"Great! Look what you did," says Johnny. "Now what? Are you going to help me with this?"
And as if it isn't painfully clear what he meant by this, he grips his dick and tugs it meaningfully in Daniel's direction. Daniel's mouth curls. "If I wanted the clap and didn't hate your guts, yeah, sure, maybe."
"You can't get anything from a handjob, dude."
Doubt flickers across his face like wind rippling a shallow puddle.
"Can you?"
He isn't even going to try addressing that.
"I am now obliged to ask you to leave the bar," Daniel says calmly, like a fucking professional. "You can't do this kind of shit in here."
Faint belligerence makes a game attempt at rallying.
"What, you the bouncer too? You gonna make me? You don't think I can?"
asks Daniel, and if he privately has his doubts, that's his business.
"You've had way more to drink."
He folds his arms. "And we both know how it ended, last time we fought." He didn't think it was possible for Johnny Lawrence to be more obnoxious as a human being, but he has never imagined adding, "isn't embarrassed to stand around with his dick in hand," to the already lengthy list. Doesn't he know this shit is supposed to be embarrassing? But Johnny's perhaps even drunker than he looks, upon more careful, if not closer, inspection. The flush on his cheeks isn't from shame, and his eyes are very bright, but somehow also dull. He's a tall drink of wish-you-were-someone-else's-problem.
"Never get tired of lording it over me, do you, LaRusso?"
says Johnny, head falling back a little as he looks around the storeroom. His dick is still hard, and probably will be until he passes out, blood moving too slowly to realize the game's over. An appendage as stupid as the guy it's connected to.
"Don't think about it all that much, tell you the truth," says Daniel.
"Oh, yeah?" Johnny's still idly stripping his dick, but he's losing interest, his mind not able to focus enough to maintain the mood. He would have only disappointed the girl, Daniel thinks.
"Yeah, not everyone is stuck back in high school, Johnny, trying to hold on to the bullshit glory days. Some of us have lives, shit to do, you know, plans, trying to make something of ourselves. We're not all pathetic losers standing around with our dicks out in a dive bar back room."
"You're bleeding all over the floor," says Johnny, giving up on his dick to point at Daniel's feet. Daniel looks down and curses. He'd forgot about the cut on his finger. Johnny puts his dick away, and that's the last helpful thing he does in the night. He gets it into his inebriated mind that he needs to help with the bleeding situation. He is closer to Daniel without the help of a bar than he has been in at least 2 years, and it is terrible.
"Just back off, all right?"
snaps Daniel.
"Okay, okay," says Johnny, raising his hands. "I get it. You're, like, really into bleeding stupidly. Good for you. It's the 90s. Pride for all."
"Mother Mary, you are annoying. You suck a guy's dick once and you suffer for all eternity. Father Cavey had been right all along. Who knew?" He continues rummaging through the first aid kit with his non-bleeding hand, but it's mostly full of useless large bandages and expired aspirin. Johnny reaches over his shoulder to pluck out a roll of gauze.
Man, your first aid kit sucks, he says, drawing out the last word.
He tosses the roll up and catches it, hand moving with depressing speed and accuracy.
What the fuck?
Are you going to bleed to death?
Why are you still in here? Daniel says.
He gives up on the kit, figuring he'll make do with some paper towel and tape, and turns around. Johnny tosses a roll of gauze again, and Daniel tries to intercept it, but he's too quick. Johnny waggles it above his head, like this is a school bus and he's just taken Daniel's hat. Daniel glowers at him and decides all at once to leave it alone. He's not getting paid for this. He turns and heads for the door.
Really? Says Johnny. Almost plaintive. Definitely disappointed. Pure crushed.
You're just giving up.
Bleeding here, snaps Daniel, waving his red hand over his shoulder. And you need to leave. You can't be in here.
Back behind the bar, safe, he locates a paper towel and eventually some tape in a drawer. He rinses his hand in the sink and gets his finger wrapped tight, and then it's back to the fray. And he almost forgets about the whole thing.
Chapter 5.
It takes him too long to come back to himself, despite the sound of the wind overhead and the rocking of the boat. But eventually the sun rises enough to become unignorable, and Daniel grunts and shifts up against the stern.
Damn it,
he says, rubbing his eyes. Didn't mean to do that.
Sorry. Why'd you let me do that?
But Mr. Miyagi is immune to all criticism, as per usual.
I catch fish. You catch Z's. Fair trade.
What's the trade there? He asks, mystified and maybe vaguely affronted by the idea of anyone doing him a favor. Mr. Miyagi shows him the cooler of fish and raises his eyebrows meaningfully.
You not talking.
Oh, ha ha, nice, he says. He is not called in on Saturday night, and he celebrates by sleeping for 11 hours. It's so sad. He goes to bed at 8 and then wakes up at time to catch the mid-morning mass with his ma, and that's it. That's his weekend.
You're being dramatic, says his ma. It doesn't take that long. You have the whole afternoon to yourself.
I'm not being dramatic, says Daniel. But then it's the rite of peace, and he has to bend past her to shake Mr. Englert's hand.
Yeah. Peace be with you, you philandering fuck.
And he gives a smile to Ms. Butler from the row in front of them as he shakes her hand.
Peace be with you, lady. I know you think I'm going to burn in hell.
After this, you're going to get invited to lunch, he whispers. And I'll get dragged along, and before we know it, bam, weekend over.
You don't have to come along,
she says, and he knows that tone. He's already dying inside because of that tone. His fate is sealed.
Jesus Christ, he mutters.
She slaps his arm.
Daniel, not in church.
Shocking. He gets dragged along. Sunday evening is reserved for the two of them eating a meal together and cooking for the week ahead. A roast for the night and then a massive bulk batch of stew.
So, she says, you meet any girls at this new job? Gotta be better than the garage, right?
He shakes his head and hands over the wooden spoon like it's a baton.
Yeah, sure. I've met new girls. I've met a couple hundred of them. They're all real eager for my attention before I hand them the drink and ask for money.
Oh, no. Look, don't take that tone with me, Ma. It's fine. I'm fine. And anyway, what would you even do if I brought someone home from the bar? Huh? What would you do?
Well, why do you say it like that? Demands Lucille, dropping the spoon over the counter and splattering sauce.
Like I'm some unreasonable person. Is that what you think of your mother, Daniel? Is that what you really think?
Oh my God, says Daniel.
And that's his weekend. His part-time being a person.
Chapter 6. Checking balance, $102. Cash on hand, $15. Rent due soon.
Why are we even open right now? Says Daniel. He's got his hands flat on the bar counter and is standing back, head hanging between his arms as he tries to stretch out a kink in his back. Most restaurants are closed on Mondays, did you know that? The good ones, anyway. Because Mondays are dead. So why are we open? Michelle turns a page in her book, Audre Lorde, Sister Outsider, and says, "We aren't a restaurant." "Yeah, I know, but like, the logic still applies, doesn't it? It's dead in here, deader than dead, and we shouldn't be open. Feel like I'm losing money just standing here." "I can fix that," says a voice, and Daniel groans at the floor. When he straightens up and meets Johnny's eyes, he doesn't even bother looking surprised. "Seriously, man? Have you got nothing else to do? No other bar you can go occupy?" Johnny plops down on the stool in front of him and folds his arms on the bar. He gives him a closed-mouthed smile. "No, guess not. You know, we reserve the right to refuse service to people." Michelle lowers her book. "You were just complaining about how dead it was in here. Death is preferable to this guy, trust me." And when she shakes her head and returns to her book, apparently abandoning him to deal with this situation, he looks at Johnny stonily. "What do you want?" Johnny reaches into his back pocket and produces a wad of cash. It's like something out of a cartoon, the stack fat and voluptuous, folded over greenbacks. "I will have," says Johnny with great deliberation, setting the cash down in front of him like a man placing a life-ruining bet. "A beer, please." "Do you even have a job?" asks Daniel, popping the lid off a third beer and sliding it over. "Or do you just, like, go out drinking every night and sleep until noon every day?" "I go out for a run at dawn every day," says Johnny. "You think someone looks this good without putting in a little effort? Give me a break." Daniel purses his lips on that. He considers it, turning it this way and that in his mind. And nope, every angle he looks at it from just makes it worse. Truly, what an irredeemable asshole. He grabs a buck from the top of Johnny's and waves it a little. "You're buying me a drink." Johnny drops his chin onto his folded arms and crosses his eyes to look at the beer in front of him. He scrapes at the label with his thumbnail. "Guess I could become a bartender. I mean, you're doing it, so it's obviously not hard or whatever." Daniel pops the lid of two more beers and slides one of them over. "Why would you become a bartender? You don't need the money." Johnny's face twists in confusion. "What's that got to do with anything?" Daniel lifts a few more bucks, tipping himself this time, because he deserves it for dealing with this guy. Apparently his expression gives something of this feeling away, because Johnny straightens abruptly and says, "Hey, you don't know anything about my life, okay? It's plenty hard dealing with everything. The boredom. Do you know how boring it gets? And boredom can be deadly, like it can literally kill you." "Get out of my bar," says Daniel. "I'll lock up," says Michelle, eyeing him. "What's with the look? What's that look? And I've called you a cab. I don't think you should drive." "A cab? I can't afford a cab. I don't need a cab. Do I need a cab?" He thinks about it, leaning back against the bar on his elbows. "What about my car? I need my car for work in the morning." "Oh God, don't think about work in the morning. What day is it? Monday?" He's still got 4 days left before he can be a person again. A person who doesn't do things like get drunk at work on a Monday night with the worst person in the world. "Your boyfriend can afford a cab." "He's... No! No, wait a second!" Daniel puts a hand up. "He is not." "None of my business," she says crisply, slipping past him. "I've locked your car keys in the till. You can pick them up in the morning." "Michelle, you can't just... When did you take my keys? What the hell?" "Michelle, this is not how you start a healthy working relationship, violating my trust like this. Can you believe her?" He turns and asks Johnny, who is face down at the bar and has been for the past 40 minutes. Johnny lifts his head up and squints at him blearily.
"Did you say she called a cab?"
They aren't very steady leaving the bar, and Johnny manages to slip on dry pavement, and then they're both down on the ground, and that'll probably hurt in the morning. "Look at you, you fucking lightweight," says Daniel, pulling at him without much enthusiasm and getting approximately nowhere with it because dude is heavy.
What is running in those veins? Liquid mercury? What'd you even have? 12, 13 beers? You're a fucking disgrace.
Johnny hauls himself up on a light post and slumps against it to catch his breath or maybe try not to throw up.
I'm gonna nail that ass until you can't walk right.
Daniel steps sideways off the curb. Like you could even get it up right now, fucking whiskey dick. That's what they call people like you. What a joke. You're such a fucking joke.
You're gonna get hit by a car.
Wrong. This is our cab. I am hailing it. And then he puts his hand up belatedly as proof of something. Inside the cab, Daniel has to repeat his address 3 times, and then he and Johnny spend the whole ride not looking at each other or saying anything. Daniel blinks down at worn knees of his jeans and tries to account for himself, his whole life. It seems vital that he sort this out in the 20 minutes it'll take to get to his apartment. If he doesn't find a solution before getting home, he thinks he might die. They get to his apartment, and Johnny tosses several bills at the driver, and Daniel walks backwards up the walk, telling him he's an asshole. Just the fucking worst. How did he live with himself? How did he wake up every day and face himself in the mirror?
Easily. Duh, I'm really hot,
says Johnny, crowding him back against the building. Daniel shoves him back.
Still in public, jackass. Christ, you're so stupid.
Some people, he thinks on the way up to the apartment, didn't get their asses kicked enough as kids. Chapter 7. Checking balance, $102. Cash on hand, $31. Rent due, soon. So Daniel's not like one of those tragic self-hating queers, okay? It's only that he happens to really like getting fucked, and he's really busy with work all the time, and doesn't have time to go on dates or find someone when he needs it. So if he keeps bumping into Johnny Lawrence every couple years, and it's his only real option, well, he's used to making do, okay? The problem is timing. It's always such bad timing. Like, if Daniel hadn't been fresh off his second All Valley and kinda really fucked in the head at the time, he never would have gone to that one club, never would have gotten really, really hammered, and definitely never would have sucked Johnny Lawrence off in an alley afterwards while he babbled weird random crap over his head. And then he would never get bent over his kitchen counter and railed, and where would he be? Asleep, given the time of night right now. Asleep and sex-deprived. You like that, LaRusso? Your tight little ass can't get enough of me, can it? Johnny always says the stupidest shit during sex. It's the worst thing. Daniel doesn't understand how his erection doesn't give up right then and there, listening to this guy. Bet you were just waiting for me to come walking through your door, huh? Bet you dreamed of this cock. Daniel hangs his head and tries to breathe. Then he grounds out to the kitchen tile.
Stop talking.
Johnny hoists his hips up a little higher and angles his thrusts a little sharper, and goddamn. Goddamn, Johnny Lawrence's stupid, beautiful hard cock. He wakes up a few hours later, bare-assed on top of his bed.
Oh, God,
he says. He reaches around and peels.
Yeah, that's a used condom. Gross.
He probably should be relieved at the sight of it, but he can't really feel anything other than stunned horror and disbelief.
What has he done? Why is this his life?
He groans and rolls over and then jerks up in shock, because Johnny is on the floor next to his bed, doing a plank.
What are you doing?
Daniel says, rubbing his face. Johnny turns his head and looks at him.
What's it look like?
I mean, why are you still here? He points to the door. Why haven't you fucked back off into the dark night, returned from whence you came? Johnny's face creases in puzzlement, but instead of replying, he turns over and starts doing sit-ups. Daniel's head is killing him. He doesn't think this guy can be human. He rolls off the bed, steps over the moron on the floor, and staggers into his bathroom. There is a deep ache in his ass, and the idea of spending the rest of the day bending over engine compartments is unthinkable. Daniel pisses and stares dumbly at the wall above the toilet. After he's done,
He just kind of stands there a little longer, dick limp in his hand, life limp around him. It's not worth it, he thinks, and he's not even sure what he's referring to except maybe everything. Johnny appears in the mirror, standing in the doorway, a little pink-faced from his workout. He looks Daniel up and down, lingering on the down, because Daniel's not wearing any pants. That's right. I'll fuck you in the shower, if you want, he says. Like he's offering to do him a real solid. This good Samaritan. Yeah, says Daniel dully, turning away from the toilet. Sure, why not? Oh my God, says Johnny when Daniel walks out of his bedroom 20 minutes later in his uniform. You're a grease monkey. This is the funniest thing I've ever seen. Look at your little jumpsuit. Does it have... Danny. Do they really call you Danny? Because the uniform had to have a name tag, of course it did. How would customers personalize their insults and bitching if they didn't know your name? Why are you still here? He demands. He reaches past him to fill a glass of water and knocks back a couple aspirin. You know, this place is kind of depressing. He continues, as if Daniel hadn't spoken at all. He leans back against the counter and tilts his head up to look around, nose wrinkling. Is that mold? It's water stains, or so the landlord claims. He looks around for his car keys and the remaining details from the previous night fall into place. He clutches his hair. Oh God, oh fuck. We didn't drive here last night, did we? No, you were way too drunk to drive. All you could think about was like how much you needed me inside you. You were a twink on a mission. What's your fish's name? What? Daniel blinks up from the yellow pages. Oh, it doesn't have a name. Johnny bends over the tank and taps the glass. It doesn't have a name. Why not? It's a fish, not a dog. And why are you still here? He doesn't have time to go all the way down to Westwood to get his car before work, which means he's going to have to take a cab into work, take the bus back home afterwards, and then make the choice between sacrificing at least an extra hour this evening on taking the bus to the bar, or shelling out more money on a cab. And Christ, how did this day get so much worse so quickly? It's not even 8. I'm going to call it Roxanne, says Johnny. Chapter 8. Checking balance, $102. Cash on hand, $19.50. Rent due, soon. Dios mío, is this what it looks like, Sean? If you think it looks like Danny was up all night giving it to something sweet, I think it is. Didn't know you had it in you, bro. Certainly had something in me, he thinks grumpily. He ignores the guys and pours himself some coffee and steals one of the sad muffins they put out for customers in the mornings. He needs breakfast and 5 more hours of sleep and probably an IV transfusion of fluids. He is getting none of these things. The next several hours are unspeakable. It somehow keeps getting worse instead of better. Death would be more merciful. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now. Do you hear me? That's now, not later, not unless I'm going to die in the next hour, and that wouldn't be so bad, okay? Thanks, Mary. Sorry. Amen. The bus ride back to his place after work eats up an extra 30 minutes of his evening, and he can't. He just can't face waiting around for the 7:34 to take him down to Westwood. He knows his time isn't worth peanuts, but just then he'd empty his bank account for the extra hour. Cab it is. He feeds the fish. He eats a double serving of the week's stew, not bothering to reheat it. He crawls out of his uniform and onto his bed, and triple checks his alarm before face planting for 50 minutes. It's thankfully a quiet night at the bar, Tuesday being barely more alive than Mondays. People haven't snapped in disbelief at the week being only halfway through like they did on Wednesdays. And that was saying nothing of the "it's practically Friday" insanity of Thursdays. Tuesday is just Tuesday, a weary little day lost somewhere at the start of the race, already falling behind. Johnny doesn't show up at the bar. He clearly got what he wanted.
So, are you planning to thank me for stopping you from making a really bad decision last night? Asks Michelle at some point an hour in. She says it a little sharply, like she's been waiting for him to bring it up, but if he isn't gonna, well, fine. She is a strong, independent woman and can make him feel bad all by herself.
What bad decision are you supposed to have saved me from exactly? He snaps, because after the day he's had, he's completely unable to maintain face. Never mind trying to make nice with his co-workers. He sets a crate of glasses down a little roughly.
If I had had my keys, I could have taken care of business in my car. And I wouldn't have had that asshole over at my place, but more importantly, I wouldn't have spent all day today without my car. You have no idea how much you inconvenienced me, all right?
Wow, she says. And then,
maybe you should move to a more walkable neighborhood.
And Daniel's going to kill somebody one of these days. He really is. Wednesday is better because he's not hungover, but also worse because it's Wednesday. A day built for mundane existential crises unparalleled by all the other days except for maybe Sunday.
What do you think of the stew? Asks his mom in the evening.
I don't care for it. I think we messed something up with the seasoning.
I think your oregano's getting old, he says.
He is sitting upside down in his armchair, head hanging off the seat in case a new perspective on the room or blood rush to the head might do something for him. So far, it's not working.
I bought that oregano not even a month ago.
So you need to stop shopping for spices at the discount shop at the corner, Ma. I don't know what to tell you.
Daniel, you sound irritable. Are you getting enough sleep?
He shuts his eyes and rolls off the armchair, but he's not careful with the phone cord and accidentally yanks it out of the wall, ending the conversation. Johnny comes back to the bar that night. He winks and smirks at Daniel, but otherwise hangs across the room by the pool tables, putting big bets on games he mostly loses. His group is very loud, and if one didn't listen too carefully, the sound of their jocular smack talk almost sounded like a foreign language, but like one no linguist or anthropologist would ever have any interest in deciphering.
Why do you hang out with that guy? Asks Michelle, stepping up next to him to throw a tenner into the register.
She is looking past him at Johnny.
I don't know. Low self-esteem, maybe.
And when she raises her eyebrows at that, he admits,
he's got a nice dick, and I don't hang out with him, he adds sharply.
She nods like he's just confirmed some theory.
Men are so gross. Like, that is not a reason to date someone.
Look, you got the wrong idea, okay? I am not dating him. I mean, I could do so much better than Johnny Lawrence. It's not even funny.
She wrinkles her nose.
Could you?
He's going to ignore that. She only sees him in this place. The version of him that lives like this probably deserves someone like Johnny. And it makes sense she'd think that. It is perfectly understandable from an outsider's perspective. He gets that, really.
Look, can we change the subject? He asks.
Girls? You want to talk about girls?
Why would I want to talk about girls?
Oh, sorry to assume. It's just, you have a nose ring and you're scary and you said guys were gross.
I mean, she says impatiently, why would I want to talk about girls with you?
Look at the kind of guys you're into. I don't even want to think about what you'd like in a woman.
A nice smile?
He says a little weakly.
Yeah, right, she says. And then,
oh, God, you're serious.
Why would I lie about that?
Let me get this straight. So, in guys, you just care about the size of his package.
It's not just about size.
But for girls, a nice smile.
Wow. Wow. Okay, listen.
Have you read The History of Sexuality by Michel Foucault?
He is so lost.
Must have missed that one.
He smiles a little.
There a Reader's Digest edition I could pick up somewhere?
And then she is talking at him a mile a minute about sex and power and the theory of the body and cultural constructs and anyway. Johnny has shown up at the far end of the bar, drumming his palms on the counter. Daniel goes to talk to him for a while because he never, ever feels like an uneducated idiot talking to Johnny.
Chapter 9. Checking balance, $102. Cash on hand, $29. Rent due, soon.
How's Roxanne?
Asks Johnny, after about 20 annoying minutes of him trying to force some shitty cold pizza on Daniel. Daniel gives a desultory shake to a daiquiri and slides it across to the waiting girl. He takes her bills and knocks his knuckles on the bar in thanks and goes to the till. Then he slumps down on his elbows next to Johnny at the bar and says belatedly,
"What? Who?"
"You're Black Moor." And when Daniel only blinks at him, Johnny says, "You're fucking fish, dude." He says, nonplussed, "It's fine. Still alive as of this evening." "I went through an aquarium phase when I was like 12, Johnny tells him, even though he hadn't and would never have asked. "I always thought you're like, if a betta fish was a person."
"I don't know what that is," says Daniel, and his eye is drawn to a waiting customer 5 feet away.
He shoves up and away and fills 2 pints with Budweiser and then gets called down to the other side of the bar by Michelle to take care of a broken glass, and then has to figure out what's happening with the television in the corner, which involves standing on a stool to reach the cables and listening to an assorted crowd of 6 or 7 tipsy morons shout advice. And then when he wanders back and slumps down again, Johnny says without prompting, "A betta fish is this flashy little guy who's got like the worst temper of any freshwater fish on the planet. The Asians used to like fight them against each other, and they're always up for it. I mean, you can hold a mirror up to a betta fish tank and it'll get pissed off because who's that asshole? But it's the asshole. Funny shit. Betta fish are great. But I mean, Roxanne's cool too." Daniel drags his eyes away from the clock, distantly disbelieving of how little it has moved.
"You're saying I remind you of an asshole fish?"
Johnny squints at him. He taps his finger on the bar and apparently grinds the gears in his brain really, really hard for a couple seconds, because he comes back with, "Want to fuck around in the storeroom?" And no. No, Daniel does not. He isn't 21 anymore. His week has been shit enough as it is. He's not about to throw away what little remains of his self-respect by performing his biennial backslide onto Johnny Lawrence's dick.
"Just love taking it, don't you? Your ass just can't get enough of this."
And Daniel pulls his hair and flips them without losing connection and snarls down into his stupid, awful face. "Shut the fuck up!" There's a trail of clothing from the door to his bedroom, and it's shameful is what it is. But this really isn't his life. This isn't really him. So it doesn't count. Johnny doesn't count. When Johnny sleepily tries to spoon him in the middle of the night, Daniel elbows him viciously in the gut. You give an inch, you permit someone to pass out next to you, and he tries to take a fucking mile. The guy has at least taken a hint and left before he wakes up Thursday morning. Daniel goes to work in a rare good mood. It's a weirdly slow day at the garage. He only has to deal with 11 cars his whole shift. Sean is wickedly hungover and mostly silent, and Juan just shrugs at them both and puts on his headphones for the last several hours. It's peaceful, and he even reads 20 pages of his library book. He gets home and makes a sandwich for dinner while listening to the radio, takes a long shower, jerking off, thinking about nothing in particular. He's walking around the front room, getting ready to leave for the bar, when something scratches at the back of his brain. He looks around with a frown. Finally, he remembers his fish. He knocks some flakes over the water and then blinks and bends, squinting into the tank. In the middle of the gravel, there is a new ceramic figurine, a fish reclining backwards. It's wearing sunglasses, and next to it is a sign that reads, "No fumar."
"What the fuck?" says Daniel.
Chapter 10. Valentine's Day, 1986. So Johnny's drunk in a gay bar, and he's drunk because he's in a gay bar. Which is not to say he wouldn't be drunk in any other bar, or that he needed to get drunk to be in this bar.
because he likes drinking plenty of places. It's just he thought being drunk would make this easier. By this, he means switch hitting off getting dumped by his girlfriend of 7 months by finally boning down with a guy. And Valentine's Day is the perfect time to do it, because everyone else here has to be thinking the same thing. Except for the part about the girlfriend. Johnny didn't think any of these guys were thinking much about women at the moment. It's kind of weird, looking at other guys and have some of them look back at him, and it's all okay. Like, that's the deal here. You can look. Anyway, so Johnny's drunk in a gay bar. And so is Daniel LaRusso. Holy shit. That is him. That is totally him. Last time Johnny saw this kid, he was fighting with Allie Mills in the high school gymnasium. And now he's sitting at a gay bar in a pair of tight jeans and a purple button-down and getting hit on by, like, some guy. Johnny's drunk in a gay bar and kind of out of his element, but wanting to get back in it. And talking to someone he actually knows seems like a great idea. Especially if someone he knows is getting hit on by just some guy. Daniel LaRusso could do better. Doesn't he have any standards? Johnny puts his sleeved forearms on the edge of the bar and slides down the length of it, real smooth, and he says, "Buy you a drink, LaRusso?" "Get in line," says Daniel, because he's apparently still full of himself and funny as shit. Then Daniel looks up and sees it's Johnny, and his dark eyes fly wide, and hey, surprise is a great look on him. "Yeah, I don't really do lines," says Johnny, and he catches the bartender's eye and gestures. And hell yeah, he is smooth. He is rocking this. "What are you doing here?" says Daniel blankly. He has turned his back completely on the other guy. Johnny notices. "Ha, beat it, sucker. You and your school buddies schedule a hate crime for tonight or something?" What? The bartender arrives, and Johnny orders another of whatever fruity thing Daniel's drinking. Okay, it just looks like vodka, whatever. And a beer for himself. Because he might like men sometimes, but that doesn't mean he has to drink like it. Daniel blinks at the fresh drink like he doesn't understand it. Johnny looks at the side of his face, tracing his profile, the soft sweep of his eyelashes and the fall of his hair, and it's like, oh, huh, that makes sense. "I didn't know you were into guys too," he says. He picks a little at the label of his beer and leans sideways on the bar, not too close, but not too far. The Goldilocks zone of cruising. "Yeah, neither did I," mutters Daniel. He looks Johnny up and down real quick and then takes a healthy drink. His hand looks surprisingly delicate around the glass, but not in an embarrassing way, just, "Huh, okay, that makes sense." "Wait, did you say two?" asks Daniel after a couple seconds. Johnny reaches behind him for a stool and drags it close enough to perch on, enjoying how Daniel's eyes drop to his thighs like he isn't even where he's looking. "Not too quick on the uptake, huh?" says Johnny, and that makes the other boy come back to himself. He twitches in annoyance, like he can shake off his obvious attraction to Johnny. Good luck with that. And he looks away across the bar. So Johnny's drunk in a gay bar, and so is Daniel LaRusso, and they're both about to get a whole lot drunker. "So, I heard you won the All-Valley in December," he shouts a while later, because the music's gotten pretty loud. "Yeah," says Daniel, and he takes another drink. "Heard they didn't even make you fight your way to the final. Kind of bullshit if you ask me." "Didn't they?" says Daniel, and he takes another drink. Johnny squints at him. He doesn't look so good. He's swallowing a lot and his eyes are sort of fluttering and... "Hey, you all right, man?" He puts a hand on his shoulder, tips his chin. "You seem off. Did you drink too much? You're kind of small, you probably should take it easy." Daniel turns his face into his hand, eyes shutting, and Johnny stops speaking. Maybe stops breathing. "Huh," he thinks distantly. "That makes sense." Then Daniel's eyes open, and he says crossly, "I am not small." "Yeah, you're a giant," says Johnny, grinning a little, heart happily thumping like crazy. "You're Godzilla, crushing cities left and right, or maybe that's just your ego. You want to get out of here? Demands Daniel, sliding off his stool, using Johnny's thighs as leverage. Hot. Okay, says Johnny. So, Johnny's drunk in a gay bar, and so is Daniel LaRusso, and then they're drunk outside a gay bar. And Daniel LaRusso is steering him back against the bricks in the alley, mouth attached to Johnny's neck like one of the catfish Johnny used to have that would clean the algae off the sides of his tank. Except this is obviously way hotter. And then Daniel says, I want you to fuck my mouth. And he drops to his knees on the concrete in an awkward bump, and holy shit. Okay, just go for it, all right? I can take it. I want you to. I can. Okay. Jesus. Okay. Says Johnny quickly, mostly to get him to stop talking, because if he keeps talking, Johnny might come before he even gets his dick out. His hands shake as he unbuckles his belt, and he can't look away from Daniel's lips, wavering soft and open, wet like his mouth is actually watering for it, for Johnny's dick. And then that hungry mouth is on his dick, sucking him down and not hesitating even a little bit. And even when he kind of chokes a little, he doesn't stop coming for it. And Johnny's barely hanging on, hand half trying to steady Daniel, the other gripping the rough bricks behind him so he doesn't fall over. It's the noises that make him really fall apart. Daniel moaning around his dick like he can't help it. Like it's the best thing he's ever tasted. And he's squeezing his own hard dick through his jeans, like he might come just from sucking him off. He's the best thing Johnny's ever seen. Oh, happy Valentine's Day, man, he says, hand brushing his hair back. Happy Valentine's Day. We should get something to eat after this, my treat, and you should come back to my place, we can hang out. I've got sports drinks in my fridge. Hydration's important for hangovers. Daniel takes him into his throat and swallows his cum. Johnny really does almost fall over then. Afterwards, Daniel is getting his breath back, and Johnny can't stop staring at his wrecked mouth. After about a minute, Daniel's eyes come up and meet his, and his expression. Johnny doesn't know what that is. He is slow and ginger in tucking his dick back into his pants and zipping up. He gets a hand around Daniel's elbow and helps him to his feet. In the weird yellow light of the alley, he thinks he sees a wet spot on the front of his jeans. Fuck, that's kind of hot. So, how do you feel about pizza? Says Johnny. He kind of wants to kiss him, but he wonders if he'll taste of Johnny. And he can't decide if he finds that hot or kind of gross. But he's willing to find out. What? Says Daniel absently. He shakes his elbow free and staggers two steps away. Oh, no thanks, man. I gotta go. Oh, he says. Okay, but, well, how about tomorrow? Daniel lifts a hand back at him and disappears around the corner. And Johnny doesn't see him again for 2 years. The end of part 1.